The following is a recording of the Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. We are located in Collegeville, Pennsylvania. We are also located on the web at www.tpuuf.org. Please come visit us.
Must a man walk down before they call him a man? How many seas must a white dove sail before she sleeps in the sand? How many times must the cannonballs fly before they're forever? Must a mountain exist before it is washed to the sea? How many years can some people exist before they're allowed to be free? How many times can a man turn his head and pretend that he just doesn't see? The answer, my friend, is blowing in the wind. The answer is blowing in the wind. How many times must a man look up before he can see the sky? How many ears must one man have before he can hear people cry? How many deaths will it take till he knows that too many people have died? The answer, my friend, is blowing in the wind. The answer is blowing in the wind. The answer is blowing in the wind.
Good morning and welcome. I had these great welcoming words and I realized that I didn't print them out, so I'm going to wing it. So excuse my sitting because, as some of you know, about 6 weeks ago when I was here, I fell, and it turns out I have a compression fracture in my back. So it's hard to stand for a long time, so I'm going to sit it out here. So welcome. Today's service is about the role of law, the rule of law in democracy. And we're going to talk about things such as what was intended by our Constitution, things like that, and how we can preserve it, what we can do. So welcome. This is Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship in Collegeville, Pennsylvania, and I'm Joanne Walker. I'm a member of the Board of Directors, and I'd like to welcome you today. Let's just go on with the service because I can't remember those profound words I was going to say. We're going to have the chalice lighting at first, and Sheila Sangmeister will light our chalice.
Sacred Power of Justice by Jaume Yandel. We light this flame to ignite the sacred power of justice. We light this flame so that it may be a beacon of hope. in moments of uncertainty, fear, anxiety, and the unknown. We light this flame and are emboldened by its blaze, knowing our strength as a prophetic and powerful people is rooted in the diverse ways we answer the call of love.
And now we'll light the peace lamp. May peace be with us and with all peoples of the world. Our gathering song today, and I did forget to mention that all of the music for today's service was chosen as a dedication to the memory of Peter Yarrow, who died on January 7th. I found him and Peter Polinari in general to be very inspiring. My sister used to play it for me when I was a little kid. The gathering song today is The Times They Are A-Changin', written by Bob Dylan and performed by Peter, Paul, and Mary.
For all ages today, we're going to see a short video from Nickelodeon on laws and rules. It's called Rules and Laws, and it was part of a series called Well Versed by Nickelodeon.
Uh-huh. I'm usually a huge rule follower. I just look incredibly cute today and I got caught up. Believe me, I know rules are important. I can prove it.
Let's go. If we didn't have laws, it would be chaos. Cause laws are the framework for society. They don't just define what counts as a crime. There are laws, no doubt you have no idea about, like how we run elections and environment protections and how to start a business and what tax you pay. State and local laws and the Constitution.
That's the basis of our laws.
All come into play, yeah.
Let me break it down for you.
We need laws because they ought to keep our country running right. We elect who makes the laws, and that's because we're a constitutional democracy. Whoa. We need laws because they ought to keep our country running right. We elect who makes the laws, yeah, that's because we're a constitutional democracy.
Yeah, our constitution sets up our democracy, yeah.
And since the laws are made by those we elect, we know the law should reflect what we the people want for society. We get to vote who goes to Congress. That's the group whose job is making laws for the whole U.S. of A. And along with those laws, states make their own laws. So do counties, even towns.
And if you don't like a law,
you may be too young to vote, but write that lawmaker a note and let them know, because your feelings count.
Gotta love democracy,
right? We need laws because they ought to keep our country running right. We elect who makes the laws, and that's because we're a constitutional democracy.
Oh, yeah.
Because they ought to keep our country running right. Oh, yeah. We elect who makes the laws. Yeah, that's because we're a constitutional democracy.
Now, the Constitution was written after we broke free from Britain to better protect people's rights.
Right on.
By showing what government can and cannot do and letting judges decide how the law should be applied.
Yeah.
Changed a lot since then. We're 50 states, not 13 like back then. But no matter what, we'll always be a constitutional democracy.
Thank you. We had Schoolhouse Rock, and they had to change it a bit for today's generation. Let's sing our children's recessional hymn. Go. We don't need to sing out? Okay. We'll get started then, because it's a little bit long today, because there are two messages. The topic today, as you know, is law and democracy. And it's really hard to write this this message, because I thought I had it done, and then every single day this week I had to change it. And it's very, very hard to not make it somewhat political, but I have tried my best to keep it very sort of tuned in onto the Constitution. So let's get started. Some 40 plus years ago, I took an oath. In that oath, I swore, among other things, to support, obey, and defend the Constitution of the United States. And I take that oath very seriously. Those same words are in the oaths that many elected officials take. In addition, I am also one of the people who formed the basis for the Constitution, and the people who are listed in the first words of that document. All of you, whether you've ever taken a similar oath or not, are part of the people. And the people are the heart of a democracy. So we all have a duty to support, obey, and defend the Constitution if we want to keep the democracy. So what's a democracy? It's defined as a system of government in which power is vested in the people, and our democracy is based in the rule of law. Why? What exactly is the rule of law, and how is it threatened today, and what can we, the people, do to protect it? These are questions that face all democratic societies, but that are particularly relevant today in the United States. They are also questions that we as UUs should be especially aware of in light of our collective values regarding democracy and social justice. Two of the seven principles, the second and the fifth, are relevant to today's service. Each speaks to values of equity, justice, and democracy. In addition, the new shared values statement speaks to justice and equity. Here in the United States, first and foremost, we are considered a nation of laws. We have no common national origin or ethnicity that currently forms our shared identity as Americans. Instead, our national identity has been forged by the rule of law and by our common experience that faithfulness to law guarantees liberty, equal opportunity, and a functioning civil society, even in the face of those who, through ambition for power or wealth, would seek to impose their will on the less powerful. The signers of the Declaration of Independence understood the oppression that occurs when those in power control or use the law for their own purposes. They understood the necessity of having a stable justice system, to have rules and laws based upon certain fundamental principles and not the arbitrary whims of those holding governmental power at any single moment. Only in this way could we protect ourselves from tyranny. We all know the words life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. They're the most memorable phrase, that's the most memorable phrase from the Declaration of Independence. And we all know, as I earlier said, the first words of the Constitution, we the people. But further into the preamble, the founders sought to form a more perfect union and establish justice. In doing so, they established a government with three branches in which no one branch is to be more powerful than the others. Each branch had and has a function. And through the system of checks and balances, no one part could be more powerful than any other. These words, these concepts are part of the American soul and are further embodied in the Bill of Rights and after the Civil War, the 14th Amendment. Our founders were wary of tyranny, not only of a king, but also of oligarchs and political majorities. If you read their writings, you will see this. Many of their concerns are facing us square on today. Because of their wariness, they created this system that revolves around the Constitution and law. It is supposed to protect generations to come. In Federalist 10, James Madison stated that varying factions should be kept in check so that no particular group in society or any branch of government should hold limitless power. The US Constitution, as well as the constitutions of each of the 50 states, exist for the protection of all, with the judiciary to serve as the arbiter of disputes between factions and branches of government. My favorite founder, John Adams, eschewed the concept of political parties when he wrote, "There is nothing which I dread so much as a division of the Republic into two great parties, each arranged under its leader and concerting measures in opposition to each other. This, in my humble apprehension, is to be dreaded as the greatest political evil under our Constitution."
Alexander Hamilton in Federalist 78 asserted that the complete independence of the courts of justice is peculiarly essential to a democratic state. After all, if certain rights are reserved for the people, who is supposed to preserve the rights and protect them? Essentially, the power of the people, that's us, is supposed to be superior to the power of each of the three branches of government. Today, many people see our courts as being captured by one party or one agenda. It's not the way it's supposed to be, and it's not that way everywhere. Across the states, we have judges who are still considered somewhat neutral. Adherence to the rule of law helps to preserve the right of all people in a democratic society. The rule of law is what makes our nation so different, so resilient, and so free. Theologian Reinhold Niebuhr noted that it is the human capacity for justice that makes democracy possible. But it is the human inclination to do injustice to others that makes democracy and the rule of law necessary. This concept of the rule of law and its importance in a democracy is not new. It wasn't even new in 1776 or 1787. For centuries, philosophers, theorists, and theologians, including Plato and Aristotle, have discussed the role of the rule of law in politics. Specifically, Plato wrote that if the laws do not rule and officials are not subject to the laws, then the community will be destroyed. In 1689, political philosopher John Locke in On Tyranny described the rule of law as follows. The rule of law is just. The law should apply to everyone. Laws should be clear. Tyranny begins when the law ends. And natural law, which is distinct from what is considered divine law by some, can be discovered by reason alone and applies to all people. To Locke, freedom meant being subject only to laws written by a legislature that apply to everyone. Today, the United States, in many eyes, faces a great threat to its democracy. We have an executive branch which has been given almost limitless protection from accountability by a partisan judicial branch that gave presidents total immunity for what they call official acts. They don't really define official acts. Some people are arguing that this decision even applies to acts both while they are in office and once they're out of office. We don't know what the Supreme Court is going to say the next time it goes up. It takes a long time for a case. It used to take much longer, but now they get there a little faster. But it does take a fair amount of time to get to the Supreme Court, and they don't have to take every case. Already, in the last few years, we have seen personal freedoms and rights taken away or significantly limited. And just this past week, we watched as multiple executive orders have been issued curtailing some rights, some of which are contrary to our Constitution. Already, one of these orders related to eliminating birthright citizenship seeks to ignore the plain and intentional language of the 14th Amendment. The federal judge who on Friday stayed this order called it, quote, blatantly unconstitutional, close quote. That judge's stay has now been appealed. But this danger, it's not simply within the executive and the judicial branches. We have to look at the whole thing. We also have a legislative branch that is controlled by one party. Narrowly controlled by one party, but controlled by one party.
Those majorities in both of the houses of Congress are considered by many to be beholden to one man and his agenda. Not everyone is. Some senators have stepped up. Some have not. Same on the House. Some of them are really scared. Some of them aren't scared. They're just following along. Some of them really want these things. But what do the people want? Also, this past week, we have seen convicted felons whose crimes were witnessed by millions, released from prison in droves with no accountability for their actions. And a congressman from Tennessee has begun pushing for a constitutional amendment to allow presidents who have served two non-consecutive terms to run for additional terms in office. The divisions within our nation are extremely strong. Those in power do not appear to be interested in unity, and I'm not always sure that those who aren't in power are all that interested in unity. Those in power seem to be solely interested in power and wealth, or they are weak and too frightened to stand up for our democracy. I'm going to quote and sort of paraphrase something from one of my very favorite movie speeches. It starts out, "America isn't easy. America is advanced citizenship. You've got to want it bad because it's going to put up a fight. We have serious problems to solve, and we need serious people to solve them. People who seek only power and who seek to feed only their egos and their self-interest, they aren't interested in solving those problems. As the president in the movie states, they are interested in two things and only two things: making you afraid of the problem and telling you who to blame for it." These words and ideas are from a 1996 movie, The American President. At the end of it, Michael Douglas gives this great speech, and it's really good. I am no Michael Douglas. I can't deliver it the same way. But consider, they were written almost 30 years ago, and yet they echo through time. From Plato and Aristotle to John Adams and James Madison to today, as we embark on a journey through unknown and uncharted territory. Did anyone else notice the difference between the marches this year and those in 2017? Have we become complacent? Have we given up, or are we just too afraid of the cold? Hard to say, though, in that last one. We as UUs, we as the people, cannot let our guard down. It doesn't matter who's in power. We cannot let our guard down. We cannot stand by and say, "This too shall pass," because we must be serious people. People who stand up for the rule of law and the security and endurance of our democracy. If we do not do so, then we have no one to blame but ourselves as our country moves from a democratic republic to an oligarchy to who knows what else. So my challenge to all of you today is, what will you do? How will you behave when you see the rule of law being challenged or ignored? Will you sit quietly and wish it would all go away? Would you turn off the news permanently? Would you take a wait and see approach? Or will you stand up some way for this very basic principle of democracy? So you might say, "Well, how can I stand up? I'm only one person." Well, people stand up with their voice, with their hearts, with their pens, sometimes with their money, sometimes with their feet. They've already given us their plan. Find an issue that you feel strongly about and start there, looking for groups or other people who have
heart and soul in the same issues that you do. Two great men in American history already set us on a path to action, one in the late 1700s and one in the 1960s. Benjamin Franklin referred to our new government as an egg. What will you do? Will you watch the egg, the fragile egg, fall and crack into a million pieces? Or will you step up and find a way to help protect it? No work to protect the egg is too small. We can all play a part because, remember, we're supposed to be in charge. We are the people. And Martin Luther King famously said, "Our lives begin to end the day we become silent about things that matter." So find what matters to you and use your voice in this most critical moment to stand up for what is right and speak out against injustices when they occur. Even if you didn't take the oath that I did, I urge you to step up and defend the Constitution. No matter what anybody says, it was meant to be a living document. That's why there are ways to change it. That's why we have amendments. But remember that this Constitution and the laws are all that stands between us and tyranny. In my relative youth, everything seems like a relative youth at this point, I knew two men who grew up in Germany. One fled Germany in 1936. His family, there were four boys, and two were sent to the United States, and two stayed in Germany to help with the family with the farm. They wanted to make sure somebody survived. And the stories that my uncle told me were amazing to me as a kid, but now I realize why he left with his brother. It was not the Germany he was used to. It was not the Germany he wanted to be a part of. I also knew a man later in my life who grew up in Germany during a war. We don't get to talk too much to people who grew up there during the war and ask them really, you know, deep questions about what things were like and all of that stuff. This guy was probably about 11 or 12 during the war, somewhere in there. His parents hid him and his brother all the time in a secret door under their barn, because they didn't want them to be recruited into the youth movement. He left Berlin on the last freight train out before the wall went up. He ended up being a world-renowned microbiologist and a wonderful, wonderful American. He passed several years ago, but I can remember talking with him about how important democracy is. We grew up here. We take it for granted. So remember, the strongest people aren't always the people who won, but the people who don't give up when they lose. Communities. Our community shouldn't be the passengers on the road to social change. We need to be the drivers. Thanks. Yeah, we have a second part of our message today because we are starting a process here at TPUF. And I was the one who kind of set the parameters up for this process. So we're going to begin here at TPUF a strategic planning initiative. And I will be leading this effort, and it's going to focus on mapping out our plans. Remember, we're the people here for TPUF over the next 5 years. The goal of this initiative is to present a five-year strategic plan to the entire congregation at the annual meeting in June. So 5 months, not even five full months to get this done. The process itself is going to include several steps which really need your participation as much as possible. One of those steps is having members of the congregation. Do you have that slide, Mike? One of the steps is having members of the congregation complete a short form called a SWAT form. There it is. Okay. This is what it looks like. So a SWAT form, you fill in what you think are the strengths and weaknesses of TPOF and what you think are opportunities and threats to TPOF. And remember, this can be usually strengths and weaknesses are things that come from inside the organization, and opportunities and threats are things that tend to come from outside the organization. So I'm asking everybody to complete one of these forms, whether you're going to get it today when you leave. I'm going to email it out as well, whether you put it, handwrite it, or whether you type it, doesn't matter to me. You can make it anonymous, you can make it not anonymous. All I'm asking is that you make them legible and get them back to me on time. Okay? I'm a real stickler for the on time stuff, okay? So in addition, in the materials you're going to get today, you're going to get two sheets of paper. I'm not trying to overwhelm everybody. You're going to, on both sides, they're both double-sided, and I thank Linda for copying them yesterday for me. The SWAT form is on one side of a page, and on the back of that page is a more detailed explanation of what SWAT means and what you need to consider. I just want your opinions. I don't want you to talk to other people about it. Put your opinions. And if you're a family, please have both spouses or partners do it, their individual ones. I just want to hear what you think. So if you email it to me, I'm going to know who you are, but no one else is going to see the document except me. I'm the only one who's going to look at them. And when we're all done, they're going to get shredded in my handy dandy shredder, okay? If you're on Zoom, I'm going to try to email them out in the next day or so. And there will be extras sitting in the lobby over the next couple weeks. There's a box out there now on that table when you come in where you can slip them in. And you can, as I said, you can also email them to me, but they're due back to me by February 16th. I think that's enough time to fill in four squares. So, you know, and you don't have, if you only have one idea for one square, put it down. And if you can't think of another one, that's fine. Now, another part of this is that beginning next Sunday, we're going to have a series of three meetings to work on this as a group. Each meeting is being offered twice to allow for more people to attend. Some of them are going to be in person, others will be on Zoom. I will be at every single one. So I really would like people to participate. I don't want to sit there staring at the screen by myself or sitting here all by myself. In these meetings, we as a congregation are going to brainstorm ways to make TPOF grow, to make it more resilient, and make it expand and be stronger over the next 5 years. Those ideas that we're going to talk about are going to be extracted by me from the SWAT forms that you give me. The ideas there, I'm going to see what are the top 10, and then we'll work on those. You can't make a strategic plan that has, 25 points to be doing. We're going to try to get it down to four or five at the most.
Not every idea that's offered can be included in the final plan, but we will consider as many ideas as are practical and possible. This is not the board's job. This is the congregation's job. So you might say, well, what do we need this for? You know, well, a plan's going to help us, including the board, come together to determine our future as a fellowship and how we intend to get to that future. For instance, we all know this building is aging. How are we going to plan to do the work to maintain it? How are we going to fund it? Not everything in this plan has to be about money. It should be about community. It can be about people. It can be about having other kinds of small groups. It can be anything that comes into your head. How will we work to bring in more members? That could be one of the ideas. I'm sure most of you would want some input into the topics and to be able to suggest other topics if you come up with them. Anything I think of, I've only been here a few years, which kind of makes it better for me to be sort of the person organizing it, because I don't have any real big history here. So it will, you know, I'll be able to see, oh, I didn't even know that happened. You know, I can be surprised easily here. So as you leave the sanctuary today, I ask you to pick up two handouts which explain the process further. The second handout has some general information, and then on the opposite side of that is the entire schedule for meetings. Which ones are on Zoom, which ones are in person. Now, granted, the weather may interfere, you never know, but we can deal with it. Some people are more comfortable in person. Other people are more comfortable on Zoom. We will use breakout rooms in Zoom, but don't worry, I get to set that up. You don't have to do anything. And so I'm asking you to please, please mark your calendars now with these important dates. They go from next Sunday, which we're going to have a little meeting right after services, all the way in towards the end of March. In between the meetings, I will summarize some of the things that happened at the prior meeting so that you know what happened, because I have to put together what the people in person say with what the people on Zoom say. And you can go to both, it doesn't matter to me. Now, I do have one request. Well, it might be considered multiple requests of you. I really would like you to respect the process and the deadlines and the dates that have been set up. It might seem like a lot of work to you, but frankly, it's more work for me. I've set aside 6 different dates for meetings. I've set aside blocks of time to do summarizations and all that. And then at the end, I have to put it all together and write a draft plan. So please, I need your cooperation to accomplish this. Mark those deadlines down. Don't lose the handouts. Scan them if you have to and put them in your phone. But there'll always be extras out here until February, whatever it was I said, 16th. And you know, you can always email me, although I would prefer you get them in out here because my email is already pretty crowded. My email address is on lots of the pieces of paper you're getting. It's been on a zillion slides. So I think by now we all have my email. So I'll be around after the service if anyone wants to ask any questions. I thought it would be better to do that privately. And then next week, we're going to talk about some things that are like the beginning points of a strategic plan. So I thank you for listening. I hope you'll all participate. And at this point, we're going to turn to Tony to have matters of the heart.
You've all seen me before, I think. power should make a difference. Yes, yes. She has talked about participation. One of the ways we participate and share here is to share what we personally are experiencing that is a joy to us or causes us concern and sorrow. Every Sunday, we take time for people who would like to share to come forward, remind us who you are, and briefly share that which is on your heart of joy or sorrow or concern. And now is the time to come on up and do that. Then we can bring this time of sharing to a close with our usual happy song. Spirit of Life. By chance, this past week, a few days ago, I came upon I'm trying to make sense out of what's in my file cabinets. And one of the files I came upon was service stuff. It included an order of service for this congregation from 1994. But it also had, and I do not know what the original source of this was, but it must have been a UU source because it was all UU materials in that folder. And it seemed to me appropriate now. This is Symptoms of Spiritual Recovery. And it seems to me worth looking at some of them because many of us have been experiencing a certain amount of sickness of the heart and spirit because of the political situation in our country today. And I think we should, or we can, begin to experience some healing. And I'm not going to read all of these, but some of the symptoms of recovery might be heartening and encouraging, and perhaps you can look for some of them in yourselves or your friends. The first one that was listed is a tendency to think and act spontaneously rather than from fear. A second is an unmistakable ability to enjoy each moment. Third, a loss of interest in judging other people. A very serious symptom of recovery, of healing, is a loss of the ability to worry. Healing might be also accompanied with frequent, overwhelming episodes of appreciation, perhaps for one another, perhaps for spirit. Could also look for contented feelings of connecting with people, places, things, and especially with nature. Healing people might experience frequent attacks of smiling. And finally, an increased susceptibility to the love extended by others, as well as the uncontrollable urge to extend it, that love of sharing. So our time of Matters of the Heart comes to an end for today.
Our closing song this morning is This Land Is Your Land, written by Woody Guthrie and performed again by Peter, Paul, and Mary.
This land is your land, this land is my land, from California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters. This land was made for you and me.
I roamed and I rambled, and I followed my footsteps to the sparkling sands of her diamond deserts, and all around a voice was singing, this land was made for you and me.
This land is your land, this land is my land, from California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters. This land was made for you and me.
As I went walking that ribbon of highway, I saw above me that endless skyway. I saw below me those golden valleys.
This land was made for you and me. This land is your land, this land is my land, from California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters.
As the sun was shining and I was strolling, and the wheat fields waving and the dust clouds rolling, as the fog was lifting, a voice was saying, this land was made for you and me.
This land is your land, this land is my land, from California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters. This land was made for you and me. This land was made for you and me.
Sheila Sangmeister will extinguish the chalice and read us another piece.
Different Yet United by Pat Ruby Lischte. We come from many places, along different paths, bringing different truths. We come with different histories and different realities, and yet we come together as one people, with faith that we can use our differences to heal ourselves and each other, to bring wholeness to a fractured world. We come seeking to find community, to find acceptance of who we are. In this place, we may find others who are much like us and others who are much different. May our lit chalice remind us that we are a people taught by different stories with many voices, but always one people working for a world where love creates justice and justice gives birth to peace.
Thanks, Sheila. In closing today, I urge you to find some way to participate in protecting and preserving our democracy, to stand up for what you believe is right. There are so many issues that you can focus on, and many groups who have already started this work. You don't have to protest. You don't have to do any of those things. You can volunteer in a homeless shelter. You can volunteer at an immigration center. There are several in Philadelphia that are very busy right now. Standing up for the rule of law and our democracy can take any form, from being openly supportive of our vulnerable populations to picking up a quart of milk for our neighbor. Americans are by nature a very giving people. We care, at least most of us. And I think this group here is a group of caring people. As we are reestablishing our social action committee, which has taken a long time and we're getting there, I think we'll meet in February. We will also try to provide opportunities as well. This is not the time to hide under a blanket. It's not the time to be complacent. This is the time to step up and be heard or to do something. So today I decided that as a closing piece, I would offer you one easy step. I brought a card, and I'd like us to support and thank Bishop Marianne Edgar Budd, who showed great courage and strength at the inaugural prayer service when she asked for mercy for those who are scared right now, especially immigrants and LGBTQ plus children. As you leave the sanctuary today, please stop in the back to get not only your handouts, but Linda has, you have the card?
I do.
Linda has the
card. Thank you for speaking truth to power. Your courage strengthens us all. Good message, Julie.
Thank you. So please stop there and pick up, you know, and sign the card. I think I'll probably bring it next week as well. Let's show that we know that real power comes not from fear, but from mercy and understanding. Americans have stood strong before. This time's no different. Together, we've got this. Thanks. Now, Susan Hare will provide the announcements.